You're here, which means that you've found Spirit Crumbs, leading you to your inner light worker. I will be sharing how these tiny little hints from the universe have led me to where I am today. I hope that by hearing my story and the stories of others, you'll pick up your own spirit crumbs along the way that will lead you to somewhere magical. Thanks for coming along for the journey. Let's see where it takes us.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Spirit Crumbs. I'm your host, Andrea McCallum, and I am an artist and an intuitive energy curator. It has been a while since I have recorded a solo episode. I've been doing the Cosmic Energy Reports with Emily from Emily and Her Stars and Things That Make You Go Woo, as you know, every month. But this year, it's taken me a while to really feel back into where this podcast is leading me personally, and I've just been exploring a lot of different things behind the scenes. And as some of you may know, if you've been listening for a while, the way that I typically receive inspiration for themes and topics for the podcast is from Spirit bringing something to me more than once in different ways. And so I have a few topics now that I've sort of been gathering in my notes app and pondering about on the side. And I also thought it was pretty aligned that today is April 8th and it's the solar eclipse in Aries. And because Aries is the new year in astrology, and this is also technically the new moon in Aries, I figured why not start today and use this energy to sort of start again, have that initiation energy, that cardinal energy to get going on these solo episodes again. Of course, I'll be getting the Taurus episode from Emily and I very soon as well, but I have been feeling inspired to start putting my own energy back out there again. And one of the things that was brought to my attention by Spirit a few times is the concept of desire paths. So if you're not familiar with this term, it crosses over a lot of different industries and different uses now, but it is also known as like a cow path. I think it's called like a fisherman trail, an elephant path. But what it is in, I guess you could say, urban planning or architecture, it's known as the path that humans take that strays away from the established path. So for example, if you have a sidewalk and people tend to go, you know, diagonally across from one side to the other instead of following it all the way to the corner and then continuing on a right angle, that path that you see that's like really worn into the ground would be the desire path. So it's basically an unplanned trail that happens when like there's erosion to the soil or the grass because of humans or animals. That's why sometimes it's called like, I think also like a herd path or something as well. And usually it ends up being the shortest, easiest, or like most natural route between two points. And, you know, I think a lot of times this is seen in both two ways. It's seen as a nuisance to people who are like urban planners who spent a lot of time planning all of the sidewalks and the routes and the paths. And it also can be seen as inspiration for other architects or other people of like starting to notice patterns and learning how people move and seeing it as an opportunity. And I think this happens with a lot of things where anything that moves away from the established path or the normal traditional route is sometimes seen with a little bit of annoyance, a little bit it's seen as like being rebellious. But I think that's where there's kind of two camps, even within like architects and urban planners over time. It's like the pack of people that feel like it is rebellious, it's irritating. They're actually, if you notice in some places, they'll put up fences or signs to keep people from creating these paths. The only place where I can see this being more closely monitored is when you're going into like a forest or a natural space that is not totally inhabited by humans already. Like national parks often are very cautious of these, and they'll try to observe it so that they have minimal impact. So if they know people are going to go a certain route, they will use that and create a trail that way. or if there's like a special habitat or something that really can't be disturbed, they'll put signs out and sort of try to like fence off certain areas to make sure that it's not disturbed. So like in that case, I can understand. But when you're in like an urban or, you know, suburban environment, the other camp is the people who see this as inspiration. So where we have the people who are like, this is annoying, versus the people who are like, let's just see what people do and then use that to guide us. And I think that's what I've always found intriguing about this. Some of you may know, if you've been listening for a while too, that before I went to school for art, I actually did a semester of interior design, because architecture and drafting and everything about that really has always called to me. It's always been interesting. Even when I took my visual merchandising arts program, I was really drawn to the drafting and interior design and home staging. In fact, we actually shared one of our drafting rooms with the interior design students, and I was always fascinated to see what they were working on. So this is something that I've been drawn back to a number of times, and it just came back to me conveniently around this time when I've been looking for topics for the podcast. And I think what inspires me about the people who take it as inspiration is that it's allowing it to be an intuitive thing. And I think that's where, in my head, the way I can sort of see the two perspectives is that one of them is more aesthetic and strategic and rigid, and the other is more intuitive and responsive and collective. And I think with anything, there's always going to be this dichotomy sort of the people who are looking for structure and the people who are looking for more, you know, openness, more of a broad perspective. And I think one thing that's really interesting to me is like we have the leave no trace approach, where it's like, yes, I can totally see why that is important. Because one of the facts that I found was that it can take as few as 15 times of someone taking the same route for that path to be established. So, you know, in a natural setting, if there's 15 people that walk in a certain direction with a really delicate habitat, that could be really damaging. On the other hand, 15 people who happen to take the same shortcut through a parking lot or, you know, on a college campus can give you a lot of information, because it's like, okay, we thought this was going to be the most direct route, but look at this. This is where people are going. And so over time, this has been a known thing for a very long time. And some college campuses, the two that I found as examples were Michigan State and Illinois Institute of Technology. They actually held off putting all of their paved and like sidewalk sort of paths until students had been using the space and like walking from different areas of campus. And then they used that to create their established paths. And that has become more common. Even when I was in school for interior design, the reason I brought that up is because it came up as early as like the first semester in interior design, talking about how the landscaping and the outside portion is like how you look at curb appeal for selling a home. But like, you obviously have the landscapers and people planning the outdoors at the same time to make sure that it's like a cohesive feeling between the two. And there are many designers and architects and planners who now, you know, pretty much won't put anything permanent in for pathways until they've had a chance to allow these desire paths to come in. Like they may have the front step and a clear walkway, like for safety from like a parking lot or something, but they won't have, you know, the sidewalks or like from the side doors out and like all of those other pathways. And then they don't use the most expensive materials the first time when they create the pathway, because they have an understanding that like they may need to move it a little bit. There may need to be a direction change, and being open and more flexible is part of the process. When I think about this too, you're learning to go with what feels natural to people instead of trying to force them to take a route that's more aesthetic or like fits a certain narrative. And something that came to mind that made me laugh a little bit was sort of how there's a lot of memes about it, how like in the workplace, it'll be like training someone on the first day. And it's like, OK, in the handbook, it says that this is the process, but here's the easy way, or like, here's how I do it. And I think it's our natural tendency as humans to not only in our walking paths and, you know, planning our time in terms of like physically getting from point A to point B, but if you take pretty much any task, you're going to probably have people with a range of different ways of completing that task. And a lot of people will naturally tend to find the shortest way of doing something. Like for myself, I was thinking about this, and the place where I do this a lot is creating like template emails or template posts or things. And I adapt them as I need to do them. But if I realize I'm typing out the exact same thing multiple times, why would I keep doing that when there's an easier way? And so it's funny how sometimes this is also passed down, where it's like the first person to say to start doing a certain shortcut, they may be doing it for a while. And then maybe, you know, a manager or someone is like, how come you're getting so much more done? Or how come you're doing this so much faster? And then when they share that, either they can get reprimanded and say, that's not the process and you need to do it this way. Or the manager has that opportunity to say, you know what, that is a great idea, and give credit to that person and then change the process. And I think there's a lot of times where like there's pushback for being, I guess, again, rebellious or choosing not to follow the path. But sometimes people are just genuinely trying to do more, be more productive, be more effective with their own time. Transferable skills is also something that I think kind of wraps itself into this energy of like finding the clearest path. Like maybe the person who is finding out the easiest path came from another job where that other easiest path was already implemented. And so there's this value in having multiple perspectives working together for anything, and also for changing the collective. If there's enough people that see this clear solution for something, eventually, hopefully, that will build momentum and there'll be support behind it. And it's like you can only ignore it for so long until, you know, it's too loud or there's too many people who now can't unsee that new way of thinking or that new way of doing things that is accommodating more people and the way we naturally want to exist in the world. And I just posted on Instagram, but I did a blog article and it was in my Aries newsletter, this piece of writing that flowed through me during the lunar eclipse a couple weeks ago. And one of the things that was so clear, and I know this was for me, but also to share, was this striving for being slow, for a slow day. Like I realized naturally when I'm left to my own devices, I don't want to set an alarm. I want to take my time. I want to spend my mornings doing things that are relaxing and, you know, making coffee and sitting quietly, and whether it's scrolling through something or writing or pulling cards for myself, going for a walk, I want that slow energy. However, I'm a Capricorn and I tend to put myself in this energy of like, I have to be doing all the time. But the more I pull away from it and I have the space, the less I do that. Like during COVID, right before COVID, as I'm sure you've heard me say a million times, and I'm not going to go into detail, but every moment of my time was scheduled. I was in school full time. I had two jobs. I was traveling for family and a partner at the time. I never was home. As soon as COVID hit, I had nothing to do. And what did I do? I got back into spirituality. I started listening to the Spirit School podcast, which is how I ended up on this journey. I started putting more energy into the things that just feel natural to me. And the more we dig even further into that, I started realizing, you know, as a kid, I liked to collect rocks and I would hold them. I felt different when I had certain rocks and I like they were like my little comfort items. And, you know, I liked to think about other possibilities for what people could be doing when they passed on, or thinking about how animals might feel with certain energies that are happening. And there's so many things like being in nature. I used to sit under the deck when we went to this one cottage. Well, I shouldn't say I used to. We went there like one time, but like I naturally every year would find a certain rock that I would sit on to journal. And sometimes I'd be catching up from the whole year. And so when you put all of these things together, that's how I naturally want to live my life. And so I put all of these ideas into my head over time of other people saying, you want to make a lot of money. And when I was a teenager, I would say, like, I want to have like this specific kind of car and I'm going to have all this money. And yeah, maybe it's not wrong to want those things. And yes, of course, I would like to have more money than I do, but that's not what drives me. And so I think over time, like this drive of like, this is how it should be kind of paralyzed me, because the path to get to that particular lifestyle is not one that really works with my energy. My whole body will fight against it. And it looks for comfort and things that are have more ease. And I think that, you know, 15 passages over it, how many times have I changed direction and ended up shifting back towards something more creative, something more open, something with more freedom of my time and allowing me to express myself more? And yes, it took a long time to get there, but it takes seeing other people already doing it sometimes. And, you know, I think it can be within a certain career where you sort of start to, what I'm being shown, so this may be for certain people listening, but even if you're in a job where like your role is pretty clear cut, but you start to see the need for another particular role or, you know, another process or something, the energy that I'm being shown, so you may know if this is possible or not for your job or if this is something you've been thinking about, but what I'm being shown is that like the more we as a collective become more open to alternate ways of doing things, the more that your insight into what the need is and what's going to be the most valuable to a company is going to be recognized. And so this may not happen, you know, in a huge corporate environment, but what I'm being shown is that if you're looking at as like if the company is looking at ways to be more efficient and to waste less money, and you see a redundancy where you're like, this part of my job really other people could handle, or it's already under other people, but no one's looking at a XYZ. No one's doing this. And I feel like I keep doing it, but it's not even in my job description. It's those kinds of moments where either you want to start looking at a job that focuses on that because that's where your interest lies. And or that could be brought up in, you know, when you have a review where there's like, what would you like to see? You don't have to say, I hate my job and I'd rather do this. But like, if you just say, I have noticed that, and maybe you don't mention the redundancy, but maybe you just say, I've noticed that there's a need for this. And I'm wondering if there's a way to incorporate that into my job description and maybe alter my role a little bit because I see this being valuable. And it may, again, it may not work for everyone, but I'm just seeing that that was the example being given to me of like how sometimes it takes you recognizing your own valuable perspective and what you bring to a job or, you know, a role in life in general. And I think there's also this energy of like feeling that if you're going to do that, you have to like make a big deal out of it. It has to be something big. And that's where another thing that came through for me is that there's two ways to use this energy, to use a desire path as a source of inspiration. So there's the energy of like being the one to make a trail. So that kind of feels like it, what I was talking about, like saying we need this role in the company or creating a company that does something that no one else is doing or just doing something in a way that's never been done before. And it can be scary being one of the first 15, you know, one of the first few people doing the thing. But if you find yourself doing something a certain way over and over again, and it doesn't seem like anyone else is, that could be the gift that the desire path gives you. Or if you see other people trying to do something a different way and there's nowhere to do it, or like maybe there's a product or a service that like you think you see comments all the time. That's what's showing up now. It's like you see comments or reviews that are constantly saying that, you know, if it was this way, I would use it. Or if it was that way, I think it would be better. And that's where like the desire path shows up as they're showing me. I didn't research this, so this is just what I'm seeing. But this is how it shows up in like a business sort of standpoint from like online social media and the use of like reviews is if you get the feedback enough times, it's worth it to really explore that as an option. And so maybe if you're seeing a lot of reviews for things that are saying like, I wish this was this way. And you're like, I know how to do that. I could be the one that does that. That could be how you use that inspiration. And then the other side of it is where I'm seeing it as like you're looking to the people who are already creating these desire paths and using these desire paths and doing things differently, not going from point A to point B, you know, cutting across the, going up the hill instead of all the way to the corner on the sidewalk. When you're seeing, noticing this quality in others, you can use that to be an inspiration for just doing what you do already your own way. And I'm seeing this for people in the spiritual space. And I'm seeing the fact that like I naturally found myself pulling crystals when I was doing Reiki healing sessions. And I love Reiki. I love the energy of Reiki. But I realized over time that the path that I was taking to do the sessions was that I gradually stopped using the symbols. And so then I was like, okay, let's test this out. Let's do a bunch of sessions and have people give feedback on just doing it this way with crystals. And I noticed, you know, trees started coming in, plants started coming in. And I was like, let's see if people still have powerful experience with this. And when there was consistent feedback of like, yes, this is feeling good, then I was like, okay, this is my new route. And now I've had a lot of people say to me, not necessarily people doing healing sessions, but people doing other things, seeing you do things your own way really helped me to start to step out of my comfort zone and show up in a new way in my own work. And I think that's, you know, what's how I got how I am. You know, the way that I'm doing things is like seeing other people do it as well. Sometimes I do things without thinking and I just naturally do it. But a lot of times the fact that I think something is even possible is by seeing someone else do it. So Danielle Sarank, so Squamish Medium on Instagram, and she is the founder of Spirit School, who I work for, and me hearing her always talk about how time freedom was so important to her. And I realized like I resonated with that, and the way she would give herself time off every month, it still inspires me. And she's gotten back to that this year. And as much as I don't do that for myself yet, it is something that I know I'm working towards. And so that's the path that she's taking that's not the typical path. That's the desire path that she recognized was needed for her. And now I see a lot of other people talking about that and wanting to incorporate that. And sometimes it does, you don't have to be the one creating it in the first place, but you can then choose to take that desire path instead of the sidewalk. And even though a lot of people are still going to be on the sidewalk, there's nothing wrong with it. It's still a path that works for them. But it doesn't mean that the desire path is wrong. You know, it might be a little muddy. It might not be paved. It may not be the cleanest path, but it might be the path that gets you from point A to point B with ease and that feels more natural for you. And I think that this energy has been coming up a lot because right now, with it being the eclipses and there being a lot of collective energies that, you know, there's a need for change. There's a need for people to start taking these alternate paths and start speaking up about how things could be different. And I do feel like there's a shift coming with that. I can't speak to what it is or like what will be impacted. That's not really showing up for me. But what I am seeing is that these desire paths can show up in a number of ways. So it's not just physically walking outside. It's not just, you know, getting from point A to point B. It's just recognizing where the acceptable or the established or rigid structures that are around us, there is a crumbling happening for a reason. And maybe the reason we haven't been able to find a solution is that there's not enough desire paths being taken yet. You know, there's no clear solution clear alternative path. And that's the thing. The more, like, it takes 15 times, let's say, you know, say 15 people taking this other route or choosing to do things a different way, 15 companies choosing to give people a 4-day week, 15 companies choosing to give full parental leave to everybody for a year, those kinds of things. Or like then in government, giving full permission to people to be themselves and to make choices for their own bodies. You know, if there's 5 countries or 15 countries, eventually, I say 5 first because 15 seemed like too many at this point. But if there's enough precedence for something, again, it's harder to ignore it when there's a clear pathway to people feeling safe and happy and content. And you have to then justify why you're not accommodating people and being rigid and making it this very specific one way of thinking. So, when you're feeling called in small ways or bigger ways, whether it's in parenting or work or in your spiritual work, or even just how you live your day and schedule your own time, just try to allow yourself to see where you naturally go or where people around you are naturally asking you for help. And that can be the desire path. That can be the path of like, you know, I really enjoy doing this for people when they ask me, or people always seem to ask me to show them how to do this thing. And maybe I could do this more. And I feel like there's going to be a huge shift the more we start following these and putting them out there for other people to see. So I would love to hear how this inspires you. I also would love to connect with you either for a reading or a healing session, because the Dream Life readings I was doing last year were kind of along this line, which I didn't really realize until just before I started recording, because what they were showing me was the energy of how people wanted to feel, what they wanted their life to look like, and then what was sort of in their way right now, what they were not seeing that was sort of keeping them on, let's say, like the more standard path, as opposed to being really open to the desire path that's going to lead to that dream life. And the same with energy sessions, when especially even when I do the collective ones every month, the remote recharges, I tend to have these themes come up a lot of like trying to find your own way of doing things, or finding a way to not get pulled down by the people around you and keep going. So I look forward to hearing how this resonates with you, and I will be sharing more solo episodes soon.
Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of Spirit Crumbs. You can find me on Instagram for this podcast at Spirit Crumbs, or you can also find me at Concrete and Crystals for my own spiritual offerings and more tidbits about my own journey. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.